Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, and every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, Answers with the Family will introduce issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. As I'm sure many of you expected to hear Alan's voice this morning, we are reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not on the air. As a licensed private investigator and crisis interventionist, he gets calls and has to respond quickly, be it locating a runaway teen, escorting a teen to a specialized program, or retrieving an abductive child. I got a call early from Alan this morning that there is unfortunately a missing girl. And he jumped right into action like always. So I wanted to wish Alan the best of luck in finding this young girl. And I'm looking forward to being back in studio with him next week. Now, on to today's show. Our topic today is going to be childhood trauma. And as I mentioned before, childhood trauma and any type of trauma really has a significant impact on people's physical and mental well-beings. But there's something particularly devastating about childhood trauma. Previously on the show, I've talked about the ACE study, which is the Adverse Childhood Experience Study that was done by Kaiser. And Kaiser has access to all their patients' records. So what they did is they looked at all the records of every patient of theirs that experienced some sort of adversive childhood experience, and they looked at the long-term physical and mental health of those patients. And the results were truly astonishing. And what they saw was that people who had adversive childhood experiences as a child were much more likely to live shorter lives, have substance abuse issues, heart disease, and tons of different physical ailments and mental health ailments. The study was so profound that the CDC took it over. And really, for me, the most kind of significant factor is how all this unresolved trauma can truly affect our physical health. In order to effectively look at trauma and discuss it, we've got an excellent guest today who I'll bring on in a minute. But being that my clinical focus is more on substance abuse, which is another area that's heavily affected by this trauma, I've asked a dear friend of mine and a specialist in the area of trauma and substance abuse, Ms. Joelle Jacobson, to join me as a co-host in Alan's brief absence. Joelle Jacobson's worked in the mental health field for 20 years as a licensed marriage and family therapist in private practice, a school counselor, and in the recovery fields of substance use disorders and eating disorders. She's also trained and licensed in trauma treatment, utilizing neurofeedback to work with people that have been affected by trauma. Now, prior to joining the Hazelton Betty Ford Foundation, she worked for Center for Discovery. Joelle utilizes her substantial background as a therapist combined with her work as a treatment placement specialist to educate the public and professionals in the mental health, addiction, medical, and academic communities. Through speaking engagements, she's been on television shows like ABC News, Dr. Drew, radio talk shows, and social media. Joelle, thank you so much for co-hosting with me today and spending your morning here on Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much, Dr. Polacek. I'm so happy to be here. This is a very important topic.
It's great to see you. And I know that you're working hard at Betty Ford, and I know that trauma probably has a huge impact on some of the patients. Have you seen the results of a lot of this childhood trauma in the patients that you work with?
Yes, unfortunately I have. Starting really from the child itself, we have a children's program at the Betty Ford Center for children between the ages of 7 and 12. And those children are there because they live in a household with a caregiver who suffers from substance use disorder. So this program that we have is a support program for those children, but it's also a prevention education program. So these children experience the direct trauma from the behavior of the addicted caregiver, from either being emotionally, physically, and/or sexually abused and neglected, but also experience the secondary trauma from witnessing the verbal and or physical fights between the caregiver's partner in regard to the addiction. And if these children are only receiving support periodically from the children's program at the Betty Ford Center, and their healthy caregiver doesn't see the vital importance in having their child in intensive therapy to process what they are dealing with day to day, they will end up internalizing their experience and are higher risk to turn to substances to deal with their depression, anxiety, and trauma. And those children who go untreated typically will end up as adults in our program at the Betty Ford Center.
Mm. You know, it's interesting. I can't wait to bring on Arlene Drake in a few minutes, but it seems like the common theme here, and we'll discuss it with her, is that trauma treatment up until this, you know, the last few years, we're really, you know, we're not doing a good enough job as a field hitting it. And what ends up happening is we get really high percentages of people who are affected by it. I know that the Hazelden Betty Ford Center has an incredible research center, the Butler Center. What percentage of adults who have experienced childhood trauma, you know, end up coming in for substance abuse treatment?
You know, Dr. Polacek, earlier on you mentioned the ACE study, and I wanted to just preface that. With the ACE study, you know, depending on how many adverse childhood events that the person experiences, they are four times more likely to be a high-risk drinker, six times more likely to smoke e-cigarettes or tobacco. They are six times more likely to have had sex under the age of 16 years old, 11 times more likely to have smoked cannabis, and are 16 times more likely to have used crack cocaine or heroin.
Wow.
That is a really, really dangerous statistic there. And as far as the percentage of adults who have experienced childhood trauma as adults in our program, it's over 60%.
Wow.
So these adults are the 60% who either, again, their caregiver didn't see or wasn't able to understand the severity of the issue and that their child needed to get help to deal with the emotional, physical, or sexual abuse and or secondary trauma. Because even if the child didn't experience it firsthand, there are 26% of children in the U.S. that will witness or experience a traumatic event before the age of four. So again, it could be even secondary trauma that if they don't process that, they will end up using substances to deal with that.
So we have a very, very, very serious problem, and we need some solutions, and Arlene Drake is here. So, Joelle, give us a little introduction.
Yes, Arlene, we're so happy that you're on the program. So our topic today is breaking free of childhood trauma. In our interview, our guest will detail her breakthrough technique of working directly with the hurt child inside many of us to get to the root of suffering and heal once and for all. Her new book, Carefrontation, Breaking Free from Childhood Trauma, gives the reader powerful and positive ways to repair the damage of childhood abuse and its lasting effects by teaching an invaluable set of skills and practices that gives the abuse survivor the resources to live as a healthy, happy adult. Joining us today is Dr. Arlene Drake, who is a pioneer in the field of fighting childhood abuse and promoting trauma recovery. She has long been a passionate crusader for victims' rights and has been featured in media outlets including the Los Angeles Times, People Magazine, Newsweek, USA Today, and ABC World News Tonight. She is a member of both the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, CAMFT, and the Clinical Hypnosis Association. Arlene, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Drake, obviously you have an extensive history in the field of trauma. What was it, just a accumulation of your experiences that led to writing the book, or what led to writing this book?
Well, it was accumulation of my experiences, I've been doing this for 35 years, and through this 35 years, I've come to put together a program. a program where I really have steps to take a person beyond victimhood to really living their life free as a true survivor and thriver. And I found that many of my patients who come to me have been in therapy for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and they say their whole lives. And they have an understanding in their head about what happened. They know it. But in their heart and soul, they don't feel it. And that's what I do, is get those two together so they feel it and they could live it, not just have that mental knowledge, because that knowing something in our mind does not necessarily translate to us being able to do it.
You know, we briefly talked earlier on discussing that the field of therapy, psychology, I think we do a great job in a lot of areas, but I feel the area of trauma is an area that's finally starting to catch up, but there's a lot of people practicing out there and treating people with trauma that really aren't trained to do that. Is that something that you've experienced?
Yes, I think that they're not really trained to do it, and I think there's been a lot of new training, so people who've been in the field a while, they haven't really had the benefit of even learning this in school. And they haven't, you know, there hasn't been anyone to give them a real focus on how to take someone from the beginning to the end of the situation of being stuck in that trauma of childhood. And then people just continue to sabotage themselves and to redo what was done to them, you know, and to treat themselves exactly like their parents treated them, always putting themselves down and hurting themselves in some way. It may not be as dramatic as physical abuse, but they are always doing something to discount themselves. And I think that some of the new studies show that you have to really get in touch with that child within to release and hear what that child has to say in order to be able to truly heal. And most of the time what therapists work with are the adult and what the adult's thinking and maybe even what the adult's feeling. And not that the adult doesn't have any feelings, because they do. But we have got to have a relationship with that child within, the kid who suffered the trauma and had to deal and cope with it in their own way.
Dr. Drake, what have you found to be the most helpful trauma technique?
Well, you know what I do is I go directly for having a relationship with the child within, because I know if we do other kinds of things, we're still not dealing with that. So when a first interview with somebody, when they come to see me, I talk about the kid that was hurt and how what we're going to do is to actually have a relationship with that child. And I talk about, are you listening to that child? Do you really, have you ever heard what that child has to say? And most of the time they don't. What they do is exactly what their parents have done. They push that child away. They don't see or hear that child. So we talk about really paying attention to what's being said and transmitted to us from our heart, from our soul, where that child is. And when they leave my office, I say, okay, today when you leave, you're going home with the kid. So take that kid by the hand. He may be 5 or 6 or whatever age. And all week you're going to be with this child. And what I want you to remember is everything you do this week, you've got to have this child in mind. So that means if you have a child with you 24/7, you have to not put yourself in dangerous situations. You have to make sure that child is fed 3 times a day. That child is kept clean. That child is taken, listened to. That child is not put in harm's way, not taken to some places that may have people that are not good for that child. And you can't drive with road rage either. So there are many things to think about when you have a child. And that's interesting, because it really sets their mind to say, okay, what am I doing now? Am I driving too fast? And would I do this with my 6-year-old in the car? And I start them thinking like that. And that's the beginning of really hearing and taking care of that child, to really know that there is that kid that was hurt.
You know, as you're saying it, I'm really enjoying this, but I'm thinking it's probably difficult too, because you quickly shift from the child back to your, you know, to the adult self so quickly, and it would take continuing to kind of ground yourself and remind yourself about that inner child.
Right, right.
But having the book, I think, you know, is, you know, and reading it and staying with it, obviously I'm assuming the book outlines kind of ways of reaching this inner child.
Right, definitely. So that's only the beginning. I know a lot of times a therapist might mention or talk about an inner child a couple of times, and there are many books on inner child, but they don't really complete the relationship. So after that first session, I have them write a commitment letter to that child. I have them take pictures of themselves out when they were a kid and look at that picture, and I say to them, what would you promise this child is in your life? You know, what did this child need from your parents? and think about it and write a commitment letter. Since you're the one who's going to have to step up to the plate and take care of this kid, what do you think this kid needs committed to him or her? And what did you want? And a lot of times they say, well, I want it to be protected. I want it to be heard. I wanted someone to show me love. Things like that. And I say, fine, write it in a letter. So I have them write, dear little so-and-so, I'm here. I'm going to be taking care of you. I promise to protect you, to guide you, to be there for you, to love you unconditionally. Things like that.
So, Dr. Drake, in your book, you mention writing, the idea of writing with your non-dominant hand.
Right.
So, would you write that letter with your non-dominant hand?
Tell me
about that.
No, that one I would write with your dominant hand, because this is a letter from the adult to the child. And the dominant hand we always use as the adult's hand. So that one starts with the adult making the commitment. And I always tell them, I mean, you're not going to be perfect. So just make the commitment, and then you could consider this a parenting class, and I'm going to show you how to really take care of that child. So that starts out with the dominant hand and the commitment. And, you know, we're the only ones that could make that commitment, because nobody's going to save us, and we have to be our own hero. And most people have the wherewithal. You know, most people who come to me, I mean, they are working in the world. They are, they have what it takes to take care of a child. They may not feel like a big adult right now, and they may feel confused, but if they had a child right there and then, they would know how to take care of that child. And what I teach them is the deeper way of taking care of and committing to that child. So I start with the right hand, or the dominant hand, to write the commitment letter. And then later on, what I have them do is start writing. You know, we have two sides of the brain, the left side and the right side, and there's a little demarcation in between. And the reason to write from both hands is to start connecting the left with the right side, to have them speak to each other. Because the left side of the brain is usually the side of the brain that, you know, that is a very rational, it's our business brain, one and one are two, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And the right side is your part that has it's your creative part, it's your feeling part. And way in the back of the brain there, there's your reptilian brain that has feelings in it that may not even have any words. So what's happening usually is that the left side of the brain is trying to shut up that right side of the brain because it doesn't want to hear. It wants to get on with its life and not hear all those problems. But eventually, you know, that right side of the brain keeps poking, 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 pinching, pinching, pinching until we have to stop and look. And if we don't, we're gonna have that unconscious just rule our lives, and we're just not going to know why we can't do whatever we want to do. So it's really important to make that unconscious conscious and to start having a relationship with that kid part that is in the unconscious.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Drake, I, as Matt mentioned, I am in private practice, and I also work for the Pay Forward Center. And I, of course, receive a lot of calls from people that want to get treatment. And many times I'll have a conversation with a woman who wants to come in to get treatment, but she is being abused, and she is a mother and is concerned to leave her children with her partner who is abusive. So she is not getting treatment for herself. So what would you suggest on a phone call like that? This is, your book would be excellent for her to read at that time, but it's, you know, she may not have, you know, that much time left before there is a real, you know, serious.
Well, actually, if she's in that kind of a situation and she's a battered woman, an abused woman, she's really got to seek help for that situation first. She's got to get herself out of there and her children. Otherwise, her children are going to grow up and have the same issue she has, if not worse. So I wouldn't even have her read my book right there and then. She's got to get to a battered woman shelter and get help for a battered woman and get the courage to leave and to do what she has to do to save herself. And then she could go deeper.
Right, of course. But if she won't go, if she's too scared to go, Would there be anything, if she were calling you, for example, if she won't go to a battered woman's shelter, is there anything, you know, from your book that you would say may resonate with someone in that situation?
Well, the book, the whole book might resonate with her, but, you know, I just, in that situation, if she won't go to get help, I don't know really. I mean, that's going to be the main thing. And as you might know, it's very difficult to get battered women out of the house.
Yes.
First of all, they're afraid. And it's very difficult to get them to, even when they leave, it's hard to get them to stay away.
Very true.
And that's a whole other ball game.
Are you noticing people who are buying your book and people coming to your private practice are definitely more female, or are you seeing males also? You know, it's a whole different ballgame, it seems like, with males.
Well, you know what, it isn't. It's interesting, but 35 years ago I started doing this, and I only had women coming to me, and women in my groups, because I do four groups a week also. But now I have about 50-50.
Wow.
And it's because, I will tell you why, it's because of the 12-step programs, where men are feeling freer to discuss that they've been abused, whether it's sexually, physically, or emotionally. And they're willing to seek help for that. So it's really been quite a change in the past 35 years, from zero men to like 50%, which is huge. And the truth is, with that, as far as how their lives are working out, and relationships and feelings about themselves, it's all the same. It's amazing how men and women, men may be afraid of women because of what happened with their mothers, or what women may be afraid of men because of their abuse. But when they get together and they hear each other's stories and how it's affected their lives, it's very healing, because it's all very similar, very similar. And they really learn a lot about each other, and we're not so different.
You know, I agree. And the treatment obviously is the same, and so the book would be applicable
exactly.
to both. We have a write-in email here from Ariana from New Jersey. And again, Alan and I want to thank everyone for always calling in and writing in. We appreciate your questions and comments. And this woman, Ariana, wrote to Dr. Drake, like so many of us who have a strong spiritual base, I have tried to leave my childhood abuse behind and forgive, but so many things trigger the memories. I ordered your book on Kindle 2 days ago on my birthday and can't put it down. It feels like it was written just for me. I have much to work on, especially with my mother, who I still fantasize burst in and rescued me. She has passed, but she is still very present in my life. I know this must be resolved in my heart, and I thank you so much for this book of inspiration and tools to do just that.
That was beautiful. One of the problems I find is that people tend to forgive too quickly. I have nothing against forgiveness, but many times when we forgive too quickly, we don't even know what we're forgiving. We don't know. We may know we're forgiving some kind of abuse, but we don't really know the depth and breadth of how it affected us. We know we were hurt, we know we were abused in whatever way, but we don't know the damage it's done to our lives. And when we forgive too quickly, we have not worked through all of that. So then we get angry again, and then we get resentful again. So the forgiveness has really not worked out. And until we work that through, we can't really forgive. Because the truth is, what we know about childhood abuse, what happened to us, we may know from the top of our head, and we may know we were sexually abused, we were beaten with a belt, all of those things, but we don't know the depth and breadth. I mean, it's just like looking at the ocean. When you look at the ocean, I could say, well, tell me what the ocean looks like. All right, the ocean is vast, and it's blue, and has different shades of blue, and has waves and white caps, and that's the ocean. You know, well, that is the ocean. It's the top of the ocean. But if you were to go deep sea diving, you would find many, many worlds down there. And that's exactly what I do, is I go deep sea diving with our past and with the feelings and memories. And I help get those out and process them and take care of that part that was hurt so you can go on with your life. And that's the difference. I think a lot of therapies can't do that, or they don't do that. But this is a difference, and I have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I graduate people from my individual and group therapies, which is very, I don't think I could do this work if I didn't have graduations. It would just be too hard and depressing.
Do you think that therapists have a fear of going deep with their patients and actually treating the trauma?
I think some do, and I also think some therapists don't really direct and guide that patient. I hear many patients say, "I just had nothing to talk about." Well, that's great because they've exhausted what they have to talk about. And I think because I give homework every week and I have a lot of right-hand, left-hand writing, asking questions, building a relationship with that child. They really know that child when they're working with me. They know I have them take time to ask that child in the morning, maybe with their dominant hand, "Is there anything you need from me today?" And then have them answer with the non-dominant hand. "Is there anything special you want from me? Is there anything you want to tell me?" You know, and that starts building up a relationship. And I know that at first people sort of laugh at perhaps writing the answer with their non-dominant hand. But after a while, it becomes really interesting because they'll get some answers and things that they never thought of in their conscious mind. And that really starts building a relationship with that child part of them. And it really gives them the opportunity to be there for that part of them that no one was ever there for before.
Dr. Drake, aside from this book being for the survivors, do you see this book being helpful for the therapeutic community if they wanted to implement anything that you suggest in the book?
Yes.
In their practice?
You know, I may be prejudiced, though. I think this is a great book for therapists to work with and just follow that path, because most therapists don't have a beginning and a middle and an end. And while they have good intentions, this format will really give them a real clear path, just like it will give the client a clear path of how to get there. And I think it would be a big help. And really, I think it would be a big help and help so many people to really resolve this in a much more concrete way and to really, really put it behind. But you just can't jump over it and put it behind. You've got to work it through and put it behind that way. So, yes, I think that would be this book will be great for therapists.
Well, while we get back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about those final steps and confronting, whether to confront or not to confront the abuser. Again, we are here with Dr. Drake. The book is Carefrontation: Breaking Free from Childhood Trauma. We'll be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Well, welcome back to Answers for the Family. This is Matt Polacek, co-host, and I'm here with Joelle Jacobson today, and our guest is Arlene Drake, the book Carefrontation: Breaking Free from Childhood Trauma. Dr. Drake, quick question. As far as age to start treating trauma, where do you stand as far as that, and how early can people start really attacking some of their childhood traumas?
Well, I guess, you know, if they're children and they get to a good child therapist, that would be great. But most people I see are already at least in their 20s. And then I've had a woman as old as 78 years old. So, but most people I see come by themselves without anyone telling them to come in their 20s. So I have people, a vast array of ages, actually.
And as far as, you know, some of the people that I've worked with, you know, with substance abuse issues that have had trauma in their life, a lot of them actually don't realize that they've been through a lot of trauma and that the experiences they've had have been traumatic. Do you find the same?
Yes, definitely. Sometimes, what we mostly tend to do is, first of all, our trauma, we figure, well, that's how life is, right? We learn to sort of accept it and how to live with it. And we have to learn to live with it, otherwise we're not going to survive. And then we think, well, that's how it must be for everybody. And sometimes we're not even sure if it is trauma, because, like, emotional abuse, most people don't, you know, they don't consider that trauma. And it really can be, that could be one of the most devastating types of trauma, because it's so elusive in a way, but it does just as much damage. That and neglect. People don't often think of neglect, you know, as a traumatic thing. But to be neglected as a child, to not be loved properly, to not be cared for, to not be taught how to brush your hair, or, you know, take care of yourself, that's terrible. And it's very crippling for someone when they get to reach the adult age.
Dr. Drake, we have an email that just came in from Joan in Arizona. It is, my first sexual experience was a gang rape at age 14. Mm. I began to smoke marijuana after that. My mom wanted to take me to therapy, but I refused because my father was molesting me, and I was scared that would come up and he would hurt me and my mother.
Right.
Do you think that the reason that I was gang raped is because I was already exposed to the sexual abuse from my father?
You know, I think that could be a factor. Not that it was that 14-year-old's fault. I really want her to hear that. However, I think once we've been abused, we have a look on us that is... people can tell. I think if you look at a child that's been abused, you could tell just by the way they carry themselves, by the way they look, by their eyes. And I think once we've been victimized, we sort of have that look that just is like we're more vulnerable.
So,
and that's what I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, is that the re-traumatization that you were talking about? If you don't deal with the trauma, then you'll continue to be re-traumatized?
No, not that. I'm talking about, like, well, when people re-traumatize themselves, they put themselves in difficult situations. They put themselves in harm's way. They say, you know, I had somebody come to me, and he said he was, every time he builds himself up and gets to a point of success in life, whether it was a relationship or a career, he just knocks it all down. And that kind of thing. And re-traumatization, right, picking the wrong people to be with. But I think that as far as the vulnerability, I think if you go look at a playground, you could probably pick out the children that look vulnerable and like something has happened, and they'd be the easiest to prey upon, which is just terrible.
Yeah, it's awful. You know, I teased a little bit about going into the break about confronting your abuser, and I know this is an area where some people are on both sides of it. But during your process, your beginning, middle, and end to this treatment, you do bring up confronting your abuser. Will you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I do. Well, first of all, carefrontation. Carefrontation to me means revealing and telling the truth. Not only telling the truth to others, but to ourselves. Because so many times we minimize and we deny. And until we know the truth about what happened and allow ourselves to see fully what that truth is and how it's hurt us, we won't know how to take care of it or how to fix it. So part of it is the truth to ourselves, telling ourselves the truth, and then being able to speak up in our families. And I believe in doing that. Of course, I don't think it's good if you're going to confront somebody that might be dangerous to you, really physically dangerous. That's another story. But there are other ways of confronting. But you can't have a relationship with a family, your parents, and if you're keeping the secret and your dad has molested you and you haven't said anything and your mother and just goes along with the program and says she doesn't know anything, whatever. But people don't have good relationships. And until you're able to sit down with those parents and say, this is what my childhood was like, this is what was done to me, I need you to take responsibility. Because it's all about, I don't call it blaming, I call it who's responsible for what. And the parents are responsible for taking care of the kid. There's no two ways about it. And it was the parents' responsibility to protect that kid. And if they didn't, they didn't. But none of this was the child's responsibility. So I've had I have parents fly out from all parts of the United States to have a meeting in my office with their adult child. And it's amazing what could happen, and amazing some of the great things that happen. Some of the parents that say, okay, I take responsibility. It was not your fault. You were the child. I was the adult. And it's beautiful. Then, of course, we do have some parents who don't want to take responsibility and want to deny it. But then you'll know, should I have a relationship with this person or not? When you know exactly where they stand and you've told the truth, you'll know exactly what kind of a relationship you should have, or if you should have one at all. So I think it's really imperative, because unless you confront or carefront that aggressor as an adult, you will always see that person through the eyes of a child and always be frightened. And it takes courage to be able to head on, just say the truth. You're not trying to hurt anybody. You're trying to just tell the truth, take back your life, and live. You can't have a relationship unless it's built in honesty. And I tell all of my people that. And when their parents come in, I tell them that. You don't have a relationship yet until you have honesty. And that seems to work out really great.
So it sounds like even if you know the parent or the person that was the abuser could possibly deny the allegation, it's right. Still important to go through that process.
Yes, because I build my people up for this. I always tell them, it's important that you know what happened. We're not asking them to believe us. We're telling them, and if they are adult enough and a good enough parent enough to hear that and to accept the responsibility, fine. But their word, whether they believe it or not, is not going to change whether my client believes themselves, because they have to believe themselves already.
Thank you, Doc.
And many times, too, the problem here, too, is mothers, or let's say the father is an abuser or an uncle. You know, why didn't the parents know that? Why doesn't the mother know that a daughter is being abused in the household? A mother is supposed to be able to see what's happening with that kid, and if she doesn't see it in person with her eyes, when you look at a child that's being abused, their behavior changes, their look changes. So many things change about them that if a mother doesn't know, I just can't comprehend that. I believe that they just don't want to know because they don't want to change their life. So it's a mother's responsibility to know what's going on. And I'll tell you something. I own a cat, and I know people who love animals and have their animals. And every time an animal, when my cat gets sick, I look at her, and I could tell by her little face exactly what's going on. And I take her to the vet. Now, she doesn't speak English, but I just know her. And it's hard to believe that a parent wouldn't know what's going on with the child, that something did not seem right, especially a mother. So I just, they have to be confronted, too, because they're equally culpable. It happened under their watch.
And when you speak to, or if you're able to speak to the mothers, do you often hear about the secondary gain? You know, well, my husband was supporting the family, or
right,
the uncle
right.
was, you know, so do
that's
you
exactly
hear
it,
that?
The secondary gains. They don't want to lose the support of the husband. They don't want to lose a relationship. That's exactly it. And they put that above their child, you know, and a mother is supposed to put their child before everything.
Well, absolutely. They're supposed to protect them. Have you also spoken to mothers who, not only regarding the secondary gain, but who are also survivors of abuse?
Yes, I have. And some mothers have been so cruel as to say to their child when they learn, well, it happened to me. Like, so what had happened to you? That happens, which is very cruel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I believe that by them not checking in with themselves and taking care of their own hurt, they just pass it on. You know, so much of this continues from generation to generation.
That's right.
And it's really important that we stop it. And that's what I feel like we're doing now, doing this work, you know, really making this the last generation, to not have this go on and on. And so many mothers, I've had mothers know, I've had a mother who would actually take her daughter from her bedroom into her own bedroom and leave her there for her father.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Oh boy.
I mean, really. And it's just because she just felt she had to do that.
Oh.
And she sacrificed. So it just gets, sometimes you just hear from bad to worse, you know?
Yes. So I have another email for you. This is from Heather in Iowa. She writes, "Do you think the underreporting of a traumatic event like an abuse is because of how the survivor is often blamed by the questioning from the police? For example, how often did you sit on your father's lap?
Right.
Did you always lock your bedroom door when you were changing your clothes when your father was home?"
Right. I think that many times it is a let's blame the victim or let's blame the child. It's very sad that we don't, you know, I think if we're going to err, let's err on the side of believing the child. And I think many times they put the blame, they put the responsibility on the child, and it shouldn't be. I mean, clearly, as we all know, the big people are responsible for the little people, and that's just it, period. There's no two ways about it.
Right.
But it seems like sometimes in the law and in the police, they try and have a gray area, and there's no gray areas with this.
Julian Oregon asks, "My sister was the star of my family since I was little. My mother and father always treated her differently than me, and she got all the attention. I'm not sure if I would consider this abuse or not. What is an easy way for me to tell if there was childhood abuse?" Julian Oregon.
Well, I don't know if she felt neglected. I just had a client recently who said that her sister got all the attention, and she was grossly neglected. She was practically like a child who didn't exist. She felt invisible. She never got the attention or the care to take care of herself, the guidance, and that's a neglect abuse. Yes. So I don't know. It sounds like maybe that was going on with this person, and I think that leaves when we grow up, that leaves us very confused. We haven't really had the love and the support we need to grow up into a strong, a knowledgeable young woman, and I think it's very, very hurtful and keeps us back in life.
Dr. Drake, have you ever come across someone who said that they were abused as a child, but they're fine, they don't need to be in therapy or process what happened to them as an adult?
Yes, I have had that, but meanwhile, when you get to talk to them a little longer, you see that you could see the areas where it's hurt their lives.
Right.
I think a lot of people want to deny, and they just say they're fine. But if you talk to them about their lives, whether their relationships, their feelings about themselves, even where they feel they are in the world and where they want it to be, it's just usually they're missing the mark by a lot. And I think that's how they really see it. Finally, if they really take the time to have a feeling too, because sometimes we're so closed down, we have no feelings. Everything is just one way. It's just, you know, it's sort of like a flat line. We're in our life, we're not feeling happy, we're not feeling sad, we're just sort of flatlined in life, and I think that's really important to look at.
Right, I agree. You know, and those are actually the people that are at the Betty Ford Center that have felt like they could handle it on their own and then turn to substances or some other process addiction to deal with what happened to them, all the trauma they experienced, their depression, anxiety, grief and loss, and they don't seek help from you. Or a therapist, but your book sounds incredible, and I hope that many people buy it. I think it will really help not only the therapeutic community, but a lot of survivors, and also will help them not continue the cycle of abuse.
I think so too, and I'm very excited about that this book is out, and I know it can help a lot of people. It just takes courage, as you know, to really face your own truth and pain and then to help yourself. But I hope that more people, and it looks like more people are getting the courage to do that, actually.
You know, one of Alan and my favorite things when we have people like Dr. Drake on is hearing a success story. So is there one that comes to mind for you, Dr. Drake, of someone that you've worked with that, you know, kind of started in a bad place and was able to overcome?
You know, I've had many success stories. When I graduate somebody, their whole life has changed. From someone who came in, I had a young man come in, and he came from, in fact, a therapist from New York referred him, and he just came in. He says, "I'm coming here," he said, "but I really don't think anything could change for me, or I could feel any better than I do." And that was really quite a story, because when someone comes in anyway, which showed a little willingness, and I guess he was a member of a 12-step program, and he was following direction, even though he had no faith in what was going to happen. And then to work with them little by little, because it took a little by little, you can't just rush all this, and to have him open up and to have his life change so dramatically, I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing thing. And I see that with every graduation. So I feel that's my goal, is to get people graduated so they own their life, so they're free of this trauma that they've carried along like an albatross around their neck that just tainted everything in their life.
Well, we have thoroughly enjoyed our time with you, but I want our listeners to be able to know where they can access the book. So it's available, I know, on most online book websites, but where else, Dr. Drake, is the best place to find it?
It should be at it's on Amazon. It should be at bookstores, Barnes & Noble, and I don't know, other bookstores too. And so also, it should be readily available at bookstores and definitely on Amazon.
And they also can check you out on your website, www.arlenedrake.com.
Right, definitely.
And Dr. Drake, is it on Audible?
You know, yes, it is on Audible. No, wait a minute. It's not on Audible. I'm sorry. It's digital. It's not on Audible.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll get it on Audible.
Yes, that would be great so people can listen to it in the car.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, Dr. Drake and Joelle for guest hosting, I want to thank both you so much. We really, really appreciate you coming on and sharing all this knowledge.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank
it's been
you.
Very enjoyable meeting both of you.
Thank you, Dr. Drake, and good luck to you. I hope many people get your book and get help.
Thank you. And good luck to all of us for taking this on and getting people through this.
It's a wonderful thing, and for all of our listeners out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we're joined by Misha Martineau, author of I Am Who I Say I Am, Personal Empowerment to Withstand the Pressures at School, Home, and in the Workplace. And if you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you are on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and like us. For Alan and myself, I want to thank everyone for listening to Answers with the Family. Be good people and have a great day.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.